When I walked into my first DTO, what we call drug trafficking organization, synonymous with cartel, illegal trespass marijuana grow in 2004. And then we were in our first gunfight in 2005 when my partner got shot through both legs with an AK-47. We spent the next 3 hours, me trying to keep him from bleeding out of four holes and, you know, barely surviving that incident and losing so much blood. He was going into shock and almost dead before we got him off that hill. That changed the game for me and a lot of my colleagues. I felt it was our duty to stay in the fight.
You're listening to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, a podcast where I have conversations with inspirational people. My name is Chris, but my family calls me Christoph. My goal is to have as many conversations as possible with people who have forged their own path by pursuing their dreams, making them a reality, all the while emitting positivity and sharing this knowledge with others. I seek these people out and share this information with you, proving to the world that you can do what makes you happy and do what you want for a living while being a good human being. We'll talk about careers, but we'll also cover any story that inspires. Let's do this while helping each other. Thanks for listening. I'm happy you're here. What's up, my friends? Welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, Create Your Career. This is conversation number 104, and I'm absolutely excited that you're here with me for yet another episode. Today's episode is unique, and I have not had this career on the podcast in 104 guests, so that's really cool. I'm always especially excited for that. My guest today is the one and only John Noreds. He was a game warden with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife for 28 years, and he is the co-founder of the Marijuana Enforcement Team and Delta Team within that department, which is absolutely insane. Like, how he got into this career and the things that he experienced is just absolutely mind-blowing. We talked about his upbringing, how he pivoted careers while he was in college, and then while he was already a game warden, how he pivoted again and developed these teams, why he developed these teams, why he chose to actually create them as opposed to leave it to another organization to do. So this is a very unique conversation, a very awesome conversation. John's very down to earth, he's a very genuine guy, and I can't wait for you to hear this one. Remember, you can find this conversation and all the other contemplations on christophlewis.com/podcast or your favorite app, and you can find me on Instagram at Christoph Lewis. So without further ado, welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast.
Oh, so good to be on your show. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so excited to speak with you. I'm finally glad that it connected. And there's just so many things. I was saying, I'm always so excited to speak to people for a plethora of different reasons, but I talk a lot about career transitions, as I was kind of touching on earlier, and I've never talked to somebody with your background out of 105, 106, 107 guests now. So to me, it's always, wow. So it's always really interesting to talk about that. So I know I mentioned it a little bit in the introduction before we started speaking, but can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, like a micro synopsis, and then we can dive deep and dig into the dirty stuff.
Yeah. You know, basically, I grew up in the Silicon Valley of California in those foothills just as a diehard outdoorsman. You know, I come from three generations of conservationists. So hunting, fishing, just running around in the woods, building tree forts, playing war games, you know, just learning to live off the land. That was our main activity growing up. The four of us kids called us the wolf pack. But, I was going to be an engineering major, actually, going from high school into college, because would have been the first in the family to go to college.
Wow.
And wanted to do something, you know, that was lucrative, but also challenging, successful, and that type of thing to kind of help support my family. And I, unbeknownst to myself at that time, I never met a game warden in all those years of hunting and fishing and being in outdoors. I mean, I got like my hunting license when I was 9 years old with my dad's help. I actually passed hunter safety with his help. Cool. So, you know, I was just a pup. And ironically, like all of my buddies that I went to the Fish and Wildlife Academy with in 1992 in Napa Valley College there in California, they had been, you know, they'd been checked by wardens like when they were 11 or 12. They worked with them side by side. They knew what the job was. And all those years, Chris, of doing all those activities with my dad and my uncles and stuff, I never met a game warden.
Oh, wow.
So here I am tromping along in my first year of civil engineering school at San Jose State University and having no idea, you know, that wasn't the career for me. I was just grinding away, getting the grades, but I wasn't really feeling it. You know, I was kind of passionless in school. It was just a really arduous grind and I wasn't really excited about it. And that was a problem, but I was just grinding through school. And then the first semester on our winter break, my my brother outlaw and best friend since like second grade and Baja racing partner, we were with a pack horse and doing like a 60-mile round trip, winter backpacking trip in Henrico State Park.
Wow.
One of my favorite places where I learned to backpack. And while we were back there as a couple of dumb kids, you know, with not the right gear and getting soaked in, nobody else in the park because it's a crazy time to be in the woods, a game warden checked us. And he came out of the blue thinking we were like a blacktail, you know, deer poaching group. And we were just dumb college kids out there trying to backpack and enjoy the outdoors. And when I found out what he did, and he wasn't a park ranger, he was, you know, in the four-wheel drive green truck in the middle of nowhere. And like, what do you do? I mean, what's your job? And he goes, well, this is what I do. I'm a wildlife officer. You know, I basically am I'm a cop, but I enforce everything with an emphasis on fish and game, you know, protecting our resources. Sure. And, you know, I work alone, obviously. And I go, and you're by yourself in that truck and you're like this far in the backcountry and low range and your four-wheel drive. And needless to say, I kept him there for 2 hours.
Wow.
And that was kind of, right? Yeah. And it was so random. This is 105,000 acre state park in December. And I'm confident there was not another soul within 10 square miles of us, if not in the entire park. And we happened to run into a game warden. So I consider that kind of divine intervention.
Yeah.
And so my wheels were spinning mentally. It was a super exciting 5-6 day backpacking trip. But the second I landed back into civilization from that, I went back up to San Jose State, talked to the criminal justice advisor in a whole different program and changed my major that day. And I never looked back. So I went the criminal justice route because I knew now that even though it wasn't going to be, you know, a high paying job like being a civil engineer, it was going to be far more rewarding. It was going to have more meaning. I was going to do a lot more, I think, for the public and for wildlife. And that's where my soul and passion was. So that started the career change. And it was, I'm really glad it did, or I'd be doing something totally different. We wouldn't be having this conversation, I'll bet.
That's really cool, John. I appreciate you sharing all that detail and all that background of how it happened, like divine intervention or however you want to call it. Like, that's crazy to me. And I think, like, based on, you said the square miles of the park, it's insane that you locked into him, or you walked into him and you locked him up for 2 hours. I don't think he was really expecting that when he bumped into you. So I think that's so cool. I think it's great that you said you went back, and like the day you got back, you changed your major, because I think people can be apprehensive about changing majors, apprehensive about maybe thinking like, am I making the right call? But you said you felt, you really knew it. You felt it really, really quick right there on the spot. And you're like, I'm passionate about this already. And I'm so excited to do this. And I think it was so cool. And it speaks a lot for yourself that you went out there and you did that. So that's like already something I want somebody to take away listening to this, is like, you can be headed down one path and think you know what you're doing, but it didn't sound like you're really interested in civil engineering at the time. And you can be headed down this one path. And then like, if something comes up, if an opportunity presents itself, then take it. And then, you know, just like listen to the universe, essentially, is what you're telling me. And that's something I agree with.
Yeah. And you said it perfectly. I mean, listen to the universe. And sometimes we're given signals, right? We get to these crossroads. And, you know, you can take the easy, conservative, or maybe not easy, but the conservative safe route, I like to say. And the safe route always isn't what's spiritually rewarding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were raised, my mom and dad were always like, hey, if whatever you do, do it well. And whatever you do and you put your effort into, be passionate about it, or don't waste your time. And those words really resonated with me, especially then, because I realized how much, you know, enlightened and, you know, happy and just really excited I was when I met that game warden. And it was meant to be. And it led to a, you know, really rewarding, really challenging career that, as you and I have talked about before, you know, just retired from last December after 28 years of being a wildlife officer in California. And then building, you know, a specialized tactical unit my last 5 or 6 years of that job. It was the first of its type in the country, which is some amazing fellow wardens and operators and canines. And, you know, something game wardens aren't really known to be doing, but I got to be part of spearheading that with a good group of guys. You know, really honored, really blessed to do it. And it was an amazing career that, even though it was almost 30 years, it felt like it was about 10 years at the most, because it was so diverse, so exciting, and so nonstop.
Yeah, I think that's what's even more incredible about, I mean, 28 years is an amazing career, but I think even during that career, there were so many changes and adaptations that you took through it. And like you said, creating or co-developing the Met or the marijuana enforcement team and the Delta team. And like, I think all that stuff is insane that you just created that. And I listened to the podcast. So if right now you don't know John's background and what we're talking about, we're probably not going to dive into that too much. We might, but there's just YouTube, John Norris, and all that
there's
stuff.
There's plenty there.
There's plenty there, and it's super interesting. And that's how I ran into you. And I was like, holy shit, like I need to know how this guy got into all this stuff, you know? And so it's cool because I hadn't heard that little tidbit of like how you initially got into it and how you did all that stuff. So I think that's incredible how you did that. But what's, like I said, even cooler is how you developed something like you did, because you ran in, like, for the quick background is you were running into like these growers, these marijuana growers in the middle of nowhere, essentially. And the quick story is obviously there's a lot of details in between that you develop these teams. And I think what's really cool is that you didn't kind of like pass the buck to somebody else, like another unit. You kind of created this unit. Like, what was your mindset behind creating that unit as opposed to just saying, oh, that's SWAT or some other unit or something? I don't know who would have dealt with that, but maybe that's why you created it.
Yeah, well, you know, I did the first 15 years of my career was traditional game warden stuff, busting poachers, guys illegally, spotlighting deer at night, that kind of thing. You know, taking too many fish, and that's an important resource. You know, crime fighting, it really is, and all the other environmental crime stuff that game wardens do. But something I always wanted to do was be relevant and be progressive. Mm-hmm. With the changing times as they affect our environment. And when I walked into my first, you know, DTO, what we call drug trafficking organization, synonymous with cartel, you know, illegal trespass marijuana grow in 2004. And then we were in our first gunfight in 2005 when my partner got shot through both legs with an AK-47. We spent the next 3 hours, me trying to keep him from bleeding out of four holes and, you know, barely surviving that incident and losing so much blood. He was going into shock and almost dead before we got him off that hill. That changed the game for me and a lot of my colleagues to say, hey, look, game wardens are professional, tactically trained law enforcement officers. They're not these bird and bunny cops that sometimes were perceived as the old stereotype goes. And really, it's our mandate. If we're going to really protect our environmental resources, and these cartel growers are doing the most environmental damage, and that's no exaggeration, Chris, they do the most environmental destruction I've ever seen in California, then I felt it was our duty to stay in the fight and to elevate to the level of training. And again, you know, there's an old saying that goes, you know, change is inevitable, but growth is optional. And traditional agencies like mine, and we're all set in comfort zones, right? We really don't like change too much. And sometimes change is scary. But to really protect our resources in California and the rest of this great nation, we have to be progressive and we have to embrace change. Even if it's scary, sometimes we got to dive in with both feet and just take a chance.
Super scary.
And that's really what kind of, you know, and that's what kind of triggered the whole motivation for me to do that. Plus, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I was tactically oriented, you know, the guys that work, you know, on the team that were doing it with other agencies at the time that were picked for this team are all wired a little bit different. You know, we're really trying to go after the hardcore criminal. We'll take the risks. And we like the long, hard hours as part of the dedication doing what we do. And my hat's off to my brothers back home doing that job to this day, this minute, and just out there kicking butt and working relentlessly. They do a fantastic job.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Like, just the fact that you said you wanted to stay in the fight, and it's like that, what an introduction that you had, like the stories that you've lived trying to keep your friend, your coworker alive, bleeding out four holes. Like, that's stuff that I thought I might experience, you know, getting deployed to Afghanistan a few times and the things that did happen out there. But I, in my opinion, like, there's obviously crime and violence that happens in the States, but I don't think your head wraps around like that's an option, especially like before you had perceived that. I think like walking up on those kind of incidents, I don't think that's like something that you're like, this may happen. So I think to experience something like that, a great tragedy in your life, because I'm sure that was pretty insane to deal with at the time, but to not just be like, all right, you know, throw in the towel and be like, hey, I'm done with it. But to walk away and say, you know, nope, that's it. Like, my responsibility is, as you described, to take care of the environment. And this includes that because these guys are they're harming the environment more than anybody, more than anything. So to stay in the fight that way, I think is absolutely insane. And then not just walking away when change was happening. Like you said, it's inevitable. I did want to say, I wanted to back up one moment. You did say something that I caught that I thought was really, really important. And that was, you said, how you were raised. And I think it was really important to note that I speak about it a lot here because I have a 7-month-old. So I'm like trying to have these conversations offline and sometimes they come up online. But when I hear somebody say like, hey, this is how I was raised, all these answers that you just gave me, and that's why I'm bringing it up now, I think it's kind of how you were wired, because it sounds like you were raised when you said, you know, you were going to go to college, but then you changed. And then you were a game warden for all these years, because this was toward the latter parts of your years, it sounds like you said, in, what years did you say? It was like 20 years late into your career, right? That all this happened?
Yeah, it was 2004, 2005 when we had this first, you know, really exposure and violence on the cartel, you know, trespass, marijuana grow problem. But, you know, I started in 1992 in training and had a whole, you know, Southern California 3 years in Riverside County doing the traditional stuff and really trying to cut my teeth and become a really good game warden and get that reputation, you know. So, yeah, that, there was a big growth and big transition. Mm-hmm. And even outside of the special operations nature of what our Met team became, just the day-to-day job a game warden has to do and all the challenges they have to handle on the fly by themselves, you know, in a truck in the backcountry with no backup. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And you have to be, and again, like you said, it comes back to how we were raised and the sense of adventure and the sense of ethics and work ethic and things like that. You know, to be a game warden, you got to be self-motivating. You don't have a supervisor looking over your shoulder. You take your car home every night. So you got to be a self-starter, and you got to think on your feet, and you got to be able to get yourself out of a lot of jams with the biggest tool on your belt isn't your firearm. It's really your mind and your mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, how you talk to people. And a lot of that comes back to how guys like you and I were raised, to be patriots, to be service-oriented, to, you know, respect our family and support our family and support the families of others. And when you go in with that mindset and having those type of backgrounds, you know, growing up in that environment, it just, I think it kind of generates a, it's a precursor for success. It's not a guarantee, but at least the building blocks are there for you to take that, you know, that step off the diving board and have a better chance of making a good dive.
I agree. It's funny because one of the even earlier things you said, you were like running around as a kid playing war games. And I was like, I grew up in Colorado and I was running around the forest there just doing the same exact thing with my neighbor. He was a Green Beret and we used to just steal his old fatigues and we used to run around the woods like shooting each other with old like stopped up weapons and getting the cops called on us for looking like some, I don't even know what they were thinking. We had like people had pulling like shotguns on us, all this crazy stuff. And I look back in retrospect and I was like, because I never thought I was going to the military. I just enjoyed it. And then I went into the military. I was in the Navy for 9 years and then I was in special operations for half of that time. And I had an amazing time. And then not until I started doing it that I look back and go, holy shit, like I was running around pretending to do this, like, you know, 20 years earlier or something like that. It's insane how that happens.
Yeah. Now you're going hot and live and the adventure's still there, but you can do it a lot safer. And by the way, we talked a little bit, but thanks for your service and all you've done in protecting our great nation. And, you know, I think it starts for whether you're a domestic sheepdog or a, you know, military, you know, abroad sheepdog. And like you, I have a lot of friends in NSW and special warfare in the Navy. And we have those same similar stories, you and I and all our brothers, you know, in green. We played some sort of war game. We were crawling around in the woods. We were hiding out. We were playing, you know, POW rescue or capture the flag or some derivative thereof. And I remember me and my fellow Wolfpackers and our cousins dressing up in old 3-color army fatigues, you know, like your Green Beret buddy, and getting plastic AR-15s and, you know, putting on, you know, shoe polish for face paint and going out doing war games and stuff. But I just, you know, it's adventurous spirit and, you know, toughens you up in the woods a little bit. Just makes life a little easier to take when it gets serious as we get older.
Yeah, it really does. And then I think it gets serious when you say you mentioned your mind and your mouth. I think those are, you even said that's a tool over your weapon, because if you don't know how to utilize those, then you're not going to know how to utilize your weapon. And I think working under the mass amounts of pressure that comes with the job description you just gave us, which is absolutely insane to me, that and being able to utilize your mind under those situations is priceless. Yeah. And I think that's one of the, there's a lot of great lessons I learned while working in NSW, but one of the biggest lessons I learned was how to utilize my mind under that stress, under that pressure, under that time crunch, the short deadlines, people's lives are on the line. And it's like, what do I do? What decision do I make? How do I make this decision? Which decision do I make first? And there's like all of these things coming up. And that sounds like a lot of the things that you're familiar with as well, especially because you said your mind and your mouth. And then secondly, your mouth is so important. Like, one of my favorite books is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Yeah. And he's talking about how to have relationships with people and how to speak with people. And if there's anything, like, I 100% agree with the mind. And then on the other side of that, the mouth. Because if you don't have the mouth saying what the mind thinks properly, if you can't articulate yourself properly, it's something that I'm always working on to get better, then you're not really going to get anywhere, or at least where you want to go. So I love that you answered that way. And I'm glad that we brought it back to the how you were raised for a moment there. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a saying we had on the team right when we built the team, Chris, was fill and flow. You know, knowing that plan A is never going to work. Mm-hmm. You're going to get to some obstacle, whether it's logistics, it's planning, it's implementation, it's execution of the mission, a guy going down, equipment going down, a canine, politics, whatever. And rather than, you know, freaking out as a failure, how do we work around this obstacle? How do we fill and flow? You know, don't be locked in any one idea. And I'm sure as you can certainly relate to from Naval Special Warfare is, man, you guys, every mission, right? I mean, Murphy's Law kicks in and, you know, plan A, pretty soon you're down to about plan Q when we finally pull off our objective. Yeah. So that I kind of got instilled that early on in life too, because, you know, we had some challenges growing up. You know, we grew up without a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. We had some really hard times financially, and, you know, not to sound like a sad country song, but we had to think outside the box and support each other and help my mom and sometimes my dad and things like that. And I think all that comes back to like what you got to. And the thing I love about your podcast is, what were your origins? How were you raised? And what do you know, what influenced you to do the career choices or the career changes or deal with adversity and make a change? And, you know, I really think it comes back to who we're raised by and who our mentors are and who we're influenced by. Mm. And hopefully we're blessed to have some really good ones like you and I were lucky to have.
Yeah. And mentors are another good point as well. I actually just released, because I do the conversations where I have guests, and then I do contemplations where it's just me. And I contemplated last night on the solo episode, and I said about building your inner circle, finding master. I was talking about creating masterminds, which is kind of a separate topic, but essentially, like, finding a mentor kind of speaks to that as well. Like, how do you find the people that you want to keep in that inner circle close in your life, that you want to look to for guidance, that you want to look to hold you accountable? And then inversely, I always talk about helping other people, and I always want to talk to guests that go out there and help other people, which is essentially the definition of your job. But inversely, I always want to talk to people that I can help, that I can hold accountable.
Right.
And I think a lot of things that you are doing is all about helping people. And when you're in the mission scope like that, that's all it is. You're holding each other accountable. You're helping each other. And it is the definition of a team. Like, you cannot do those missions. You couldn't go out there by yourself and execute and complete a mission to success. Like you said, switching a million times, you do plan A through Q. And it's funny, I'm actually reading The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, and I thought it was just going to be about real estate.
Nice.
And it's not. And it's one of the best self-help books I've ever read. And it's funny, upon this recording, when I'm reading it, he says, you know, when a spaceship shuttle shoots into the air and it goes through the atmosphere, it goes into space, they don't have just plan A and they just go, oh, hell, we're going to stay with plan A. Like, they execute thousands and thousands of course directions or misdirections and changes and all these things. The plan changes thousands of times. So it's very, very calculated. So I think it's no accident that I just literally read it in a chapter before I record it with you. And then you say it here, like, you have to be able to course correct. And it's something that I'm so passionate about that you can have, like, you probably had all the, just like we did, all the planning in the world. Like, you know, the chain of command wants to know exactly how are you going to execute it. But once you get out there, like, shit changes, man. Like, out there, it's completely different.
Yeah. Quickly. Yeah. And unpredictably, right?
Yeah. I'm curious, though, about your change in careers, your career trajectory change, when you said you wanted to be a civil engineer and you were the first one to go to college in your family, right? That's what you said? So did you have any friends or family, more specifically, like, in your inner circle that said, hey, what are you doing, or why are you doing that, or why are you changing careers? Or did you have anybody kind of question your motivation or your trajectory there?
You know, it was interesting because my mom's youngest brother was a very successful civil engineer, and I kind of wanted to follow in his footsteps. So he was a mentor from the engineering side for the career side. But then as I, you know, went down the path of actually doing, you know, some pretty intense schooling for that and grinding through that first year of getting grades in calculus and physics and all those pre-rec engineering things in a really hard program to get into. I was lucky to even be there at San Jose State. But what ended up happening was everybody knew how much I loved the outdoors and where my passion was. And I'd kind of get hints from my mom and sometimes, oh, you're doing great. The grades are great. How are you enjoying it? And I kind of, I didn't want to let anybody down and I didn't want to waste anybody's time. So I did the company thing for the family. And I just smiled and said, yep, it's a grind, but I'm getting it. I was making the grades. And, thankfully it was that crossroads when I met that game warden on that December, way back first year into college, that it really changed my life. And it was, it was one of those things that even my closest friends and family saw this success story out of high school happening from a family that hadn't had those resources before to even get to a school like that in play. So everything looked great on the surface and everything. And I put on the happy face and I looked like I was happy, but I wasn't. I just was, you know, and I was even probably, you know, deceiving myself a little bit because my thing is when certain blessings happen, you got to kind of take them. And if they look like a blessing on the outside, you should feel it or try to feel it. And I was trying to force myself to be happy with that choice. And, you know, and it wasn't a horrible choice. It was a great opportunity career wise, but it definitely wasn't that thing that grabs you and I as, you know, wanting to be men of service and do something for our country, do something for our public, do something for public safety. And especially for me being around wildlife and loving it as a conservationist, I thought, wow,
perfect.
I can defend these guys and make sure it's regulated the right way. Yeah, that's where I need to be. And then it was off to the races. There was no stopping it. So
that's awesome. I think that's really cool. And I think an interesting point about that is that you're saying you're like putting on a happy face. And I think, I can definitely relate to that. Like I just quit a job, my first job outside of the Navy that I had. And a lot of people in my life were like, why did you quit that job? And aren't you happy? Right. And I was like, yeah, I was happy, but like, that's not what I really want to do. And I'm thankful that I have the opportunity to be able to change my trajectory as well. And you were able to do that as well. And I think you just have to listen to John, like, you did what was best for you. And even though you're happy, like another one of my favorite books is Good to Great by Jim Collins. You guys are probably sick of me saying this now, but just because you're good doesn't mean you can't be great, you know? And when you're good, it's easy to get stuck in good. And so like being a civil engineer, that's a great, or that's a good career. It will give you some form of happiness, some level of happiness, and you would have lived your life a happy man, I'm sure, for the rest of your life. But ultimately, would you really be doing what you wanted? And would you have like your ultimate level of happiness and joy? Right. And you think about all of the things you did in your career and not being able to do those things. If you wouldn't have had that one shift, you know, that one change that day, that's profound to me. So I think it's so cool to be able to look back and like, it's so cool to me that you're able to do that.
Yeah. It's still baffling to this day that it happened the way it did. I'm very grateful and feel very blessed that the transition did happen. And then, you know, like I'm sure from your military career, we can relate one-on-one on this is, and for listeners out there, and then it's when you are in the dream career, when you have other challenges. I mean, to go from being a traditional game warden, you know, checking anglers and hunters to being more like a Navy SEAL type guy doing special operations missions out of helicopters, small unit, night vision goggles, and, you know, working all night, owning the night and getting in on these grow sites, but within California borders, within American soil, that is as far outside the traditional realm of what game wardens are perceived as doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the people that are really supportive of our efforts are like, wow, this is a great thing. Yeah. Where you been? And, you know, you guys have really stepped up. You've really advanced. You really progressed. But there's also those traditionalists that don't like that level of change and go, what the heck are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. And then you get that pushback where you're kind of the black sheep out there, like our special operations brothers and sisters have been in a lot of years in the military for years until it became more mainstream, you know? And that was another crossroads where, you know, is it worth it to go this direction and be on an island for a while? And then if this success doesn't work out, then we've really made a bad negative dent, you know. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, it did work out. Mm-hmm. We towed the line because we did what we believed in versus being popular. And obviously, you know, just like our special operations forces now and your old department with the Navy or Army, Marines or Air Force or whoever. Now look what our special operations forces are known and perceived and honored as in today's mainstream world, you know, here in the, you know, beyond, you know, approaching 2020 rapidly. And that's kind of what game wardens are starting to see in other states as well, what SWAT units are, you know, law enforcement divisions, because there's stuff going on domestically that just requires that level of, you know, that level of proficiency and that level of preparation.
Absolutely.
Like it or not, we live in a rough world, and the United States still has a lot of bad things going on in it that we need to stop. So that was a challenge too. You know, it was like another career crossroads to, you know, belabor the point a little bit, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I think, I'm not really sure who those people are, but I think in any, the traditionalists, as you said, them, like the people who didn't want change or don't like change. And I think in any career, and I've talked to so many different careers now and in my own life, there are just people that when change comes, they're like, I don't like it, and I just want the old way. And even if the change is for the better, which typically it is for the better, at least, again, in my experience and clearly in your experience, like, would you not want to be better equipped and better harnessed and, like, everything that you did or and created and left, that's for the better, the safety of everybody and the mission and the country,
Absolutely.
Frankly. So, like, it's created with the best intentions, and I like that you said you created it, you know, out of passion, and to do it because you knew it was the right thing to do. And I think when you do it because of those reasons, it's almost impossible not to ultimately work. And you may have these failures and these disturbances or these massive roadblocks and times when you don't think it's going to work. And I'm sure you had your, you know, fair share of those, but ultimately it did work, and you're out there and you're getting the shit done, the bad shit done that probably more than likely a lot of other people can't do. Wouldn't do and can't do. And that, to me, that's incredible.
Exactly. And I'm sure from your career as well, I mean, this is something we get a lot of rewards and you know, satisfaction out of doing. But the ultimate purpose is to make the world a better place, you know, whether it's domestically, whether it's foreign, whether it's our wildlife, whether it's our waterways, our public safety, all of those things. It's just, it's I don't know, just feeling most rewarded with a life of service, you know, and helping others and others that we don't even know that aren't our immediate family and friends, but just looking at humanity as a whole. And I think ultimately, with that concept in mind that we developed early on from our parents and those, especially in our crew of Wolfpackers, that's all we ever wanted to do, you know? And I mean, I have a sister that's just retired from over 20 years as a firefighter in the Silicon Valley, you know, and had a great career, and got brothers that are selfless in service careers as well and things like that. And, it really pays it forward. And I think at the end we can look back and say, okay, you know, we did the best we could with that. And now in retirement, because obviously we've had some reach with, you know, shows like this and books and TV exposing this thin green line message, and also bringing in certain brands and sponsors and product that share that same message. That's where I think we really shine, because now the gloves are kind of off. I can speak, you know, more freely nationally,
yeah,
and doing so nationally and internationally. And, you know, a year ago, I probably couldn't do this podcast very freely. So it's kind of nice to be able to get on with you. And I'm very much supported by my old agency, but being retired, I'm not under any political restrictions anymore. So, you know, I can speak a little more freely, and I can, you know, speak a little more honestly. And that's a good place to be. And I appreciate you having me on for that.
Yeah, absolutely, John. It's been an amazing time. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time and diving kind of into the, like we said, the how and the why, and how did you get into these things? Like, how does that happen? And I love sharing that. That's one of the many pillars that this podcast stands on, is showing people that it's possible to kind of shift, pivot, change your life trajectory, literally, through all these examples. So I think it's incredible. Thank you so much. But before we get out of here, can you share with everybody how they can get a hold of you or learn more about you and so on and so forth?
Absolutely. I'm reachable. I got a website. It's just johnnorris.com, johnnorris.com. My Instagram handle, and I'm a lot faster because Instagram's a daily thing now, as you and I know, in this social media, getting the message out. Follow me on Instagram. It's just John Norris, all one word, J-O-H-N-N-O-R-E-S. I can also be reached, and something's come up, Chris, lately, is, you know, people are buying the book off Amazon. We've got it on Kindle. We've got the new book on print, hardcover. The first book, War in the Woods, is on Kindle and print. I just read for the audio book, which is actually going to be out by Black Friday Amazon as well. So listeners and viewers can get the book on Amazon, but they can also get signed copies from me just by reaching out to me on, you know, my email, or direct message me on Instagram, and we work out payment. I will send personalized signed copies anywhere in the country, because we're very blessed with the demand for people to want to hear the story in a little more detail. But I'm not going to be in every state and every city, obviously, with all the other projects I'm doing. So this is a way to get them books. And a way to get a hold of me if they have questions about being a game warden or changing a career, you know, towards something in conservation or the outdoors. I'm helping hundreds of people right now since the exposure from these good podcasts like yours. And it feels really good to be helping mentor some of the, you know, the young folks that I never, you know, had the opportunity to have any guidance when I stumbled into the right career, right? And now we can kind of do something a little different. Doing a couple of things, a couple sponsors, V-Knives, my buddy Mike Bellicamp, the CEO and founder of V-Knives, is doing, co-developed my signature blade, the Trailblazer, coming out in about a month. But more importantly, a whole brand of knives that's got a human-made, you know, vibe to it. A unifying vibe. We're doing a lot of stuff supporting groups like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation with the knife company and other places. Axial Precision Rifles doing some really good precision rifle stuff with me on both hunting as well as on the tactical side for my sniping background. Those guys are a big conservation group and just trying to spread a public safety, you know, pure environmental message. Are a couple to look at. Yeah, doing some good stuff there. So anything we can do to get that message out and people want to reach out, I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Wow. I love all of that. I am going to hit you up. I'm emailing you anyway after this. Everybody knows I always email afterwards, but I'm going to get you one of those signed copies from you because I'm going to add it to these fat stack of books over here that I'm reading.
I have no problem getting to it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, John, like I said, thank you so much for being here, and I really appreciate that. All that information will be in the show notes for you guys, the books, the websites, the knives, the weapons, all the good things will be there, and you guys will be able to check it out. But, John, thanks so much, and have a great rest of your night.
Chris, good to see you face-to-face, man. Let's stay in touch, and I'll get you some books, and if you want to do another show on any reason or expand, just let me know.